And as a result, she had a remote baby shower with her friends and family from Texas. And, you know, obviously there's no substitute to seeing somebody in person and getting all the baby games and stuff like that. But there, you know, there's something really magical about being able to connect over the software devices or the digital devices that we have. But still, her expectations are super high. She expects her TiVo to record at the right time, and when it cuts off a minute early, she hates that. And her Dell laptop, she hates too. It's always broken. She even can't stand her iPhone. Whenever her iPhone breaks or there's something not quite working, she blames me. And while I would love to take credit for that fault or for have invented the iPhone, I kindly remember that it really has had nothing to do with me. Of course, she still says, well, you need to tell your user experience designer people, then they need to make the experience better. So even my wife kind of understands that the user experience is important. But those expectations are everywhere. It's not just in consumer fields. It's in hospitals. It's for financial advisors. It's for geophysicists. It's everywhere. People expect better experiences. And so our jobs are much harder. And we're a spoiled bunch. Those expectations have grown significantly. Now 71% of us, even just last year, believe that mobile websites should load as faster as they do on our desktops. And just think about 20 years ago, we couldn't even barely get stuff to download through a mobile device, through a modem. And so as these expectations are constantly being redefined, we kind of need to redefine what's the next big horizon, what's the next pyramid. That design hierarchy of needs is constantly evolving, and we're constantly trying to better ourselves, not just in the software, but in the overall user experience. And now, of course, competition is just much, much greater. There's at least 500,000 apps on the App Store and the iTunes, and that's just for one platform. And given the iTunes Store really only has about 100 placements of products at any one time, that means that unless you have an incredible marketing budget, it's really hard to be noticed. And so the user experience kind of has to drive that further. The good news is obviously that design is valued significantly more. And it's become more strategic. People, executives, understand the value of user experience. But the problem is that nobody quite knows what to do with it at that level yet. And so that makes our jobs much harder. So how do we respond to these higher expectations, these massive challenges, and then even just stand out from there? Well, before we do that, before I talk a little bit about that, let's talk about what I think of as brand. First of all, it's truly the company's competitive advantage. David Acker, professor at Haas, also a pioneer in brand strategy, speaks about this often. And it's also, more importantly, the definition of the customer's experience, how the customer perceives their interactions with you as a company. And so as more of those interactions are happening through the interface, it means that as user experience designers, we now have a greater influence over the brand. Just think about how expensive that like icon should be. I mean, the guy from, you know, who did the graffiti walls and got $100 million for kind of the stock, I mean, this person that defined, kind of designed these like icons and these like buttons, I mean, they should be probably well rewarded for what has been really significant for Facebook, 2.7 billion likes and comments per day just as of December. So let's talk about the four key factors that I think elevate your digital brand. First of all, software is different. We need new methods to exceed expectations. Organizations must understand customers, and I mean deeply understand. I don't mean just kind of this superficial learning that we sometimes have. And then user experience should influence the brands, and I think that means that we need to grow and lead in our companies. So let's talk about software. Many companies are now software makers. GE, for example, is now the 14th largest software provider in the world. This is the light bulb company. Let's do a quick poll. Who works for a company that creates software? or is a freelancer for a company that does software. Right? That's a lot of people in this room. And maybe that's a little bit of a fair statement because this is South By, and you know it's kind of a skewed demographic, but still, I think most people these days work for a company that does some kind of software creation. And software is not fashion. So visual design has a purpose in software design. It's got to support the behavior. Visual design sets those expectations, but it really means nothing if we don't deliver on our promises and set the right experience. Software also needs to feel timeless. When you think about some software can take 18 months or several years to be created, it means it's very hard for us to design something to a trend that's probably gone by the time the product actually gets delivered to market. And then even then, some of those products can last for 20 years. So we can't really think about this in terms of trends. And digital products are more complex, so we need to be more aware and have a greater understanding of how products work, people's needs, and what they are. And then the visual system must also be much more precise. We need to have a much better sense of hierarchy, a much clearer organization of our information so that people can use the interface. And of course, there's much fewer opportunities to present an identity. And when I think about this, I think about the identity now living in the details. It's in the buttons, it's in the icons, it's in the textures. It's really the edges of the interface that we now need to spend more attention thinking about. But I don't mean that in skeuomorphic ways. I mean in terms of thinking about trying to find those little areas, those little details that can reinforce or push the identity in there its own way. And most importantly, we're designing for people first. Right? There's a lot of trends in terms of skeuomorphic design. There's trends towards mobile first. There's trends towards metro, other things like that. But I really think that the true lasting trend is for us to design for people first. Screens are smaller, so it makes it much harder for us to fit information on the screen. We have to be much more concise about what it is we're doing. And the interface is even fading, right? So that means that we have to be more conscious of those deeper, interactive, motion-like experiences and behaviors that exist. Next, I'm going to talk about defining and creating a memorable experience. It's all about understanding the problem. What I love about being a designer is the ability to go from problem solving to solution and back again. And that's what I think makes great design in the end, is the ability to quickly shift from one to the other and back. And I think it all starts with understanding that problem, understanding the business objectives, understanding the user's needs, and also understanding the brand messaging. And whenever we used to have these conversations with executives or leaders or product marketers, you know, we'd inevitably hear things like, well, I want to be the iPhone of my industry, or you know, I want it to be intuitive, or I want it to be, you know, user-friendly, and that's not really actionable stuff. And so we started to make this kind of interview or this experience or this discussion early up front be much more vivid and visual. And you can see how we start to create a lot of images, products, brands, infographics, cars, stuff that people that maybe aren't familiar with how some of these things work can react to their experiences in a way that they can relate to what it is they're seeing and respond to it and talk about it in real terms. And that gets us to a discussion about, well, what do we want the ideal experience to be for this new product or this new service, and what do we not want it to be? And it's just a much richer conversation. And the thing I love about it the most is actually that it brings people together and it helps everyone kind of get a much better collective understanding about what the experience should be like. It's a true, true learning experience for a lot of our clients. And I think especially for people that come from outside of design or come outside of product development, they get to learn about what makes a good experience, and they can take that learning to be more effective with their jobs too. And here you see kind of the final output of that. It's that spectrum on the wall of imagery that suggests what that ideal experience should be like and what it shouldn't feel like. And really, the images, at the end of the day, are not that important. It's really the discussion and the words that come out of that that can then define the ideal experience through attributes and messaging. And this is really what guides our visual strategy. It's what guides the interaction design, because I don't think of interaction design as just being one thing now. And it also drives so much more, the industrial design, all parts of the service experience. Now, why is this different than just brand messaging? Why don't we just do that? Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One is user context is really important for us to create an experience that resonates with them. We're in this realm of transparency, and that means that we need to be more authentic and make sure that what we're creating resonates with people, right? Driving that brand experience through user experience. And then obviously understanding those business goals at that product level or that industry level, those are critically important things for us too. So I think brand messaging is important, but it's really balanced with these other techniques or these other ideas. And then from there, once we have decided and agreed on what that strategy is, what that experience strategy should be, we can start to explore the design, explore the visual language, think about the design in that initial impression. And so these are kind of emblematic ideas that we use to kind of push that and explore what are those extremes that can get us to breakthrough ideas. And it's about initial impressions. It's about that 5-second sort of visceral reaction to the interface. We divorce the design from any actual screens, any actual functionality, so that we don't get distracted by a conversation of, well, this button isn't here, the search doesn't actually work that way. That's completely the wrong time for us to have that discussion. And I think, really importantly, that we're not designing brands in traditional means anymore. We're designing them in the context of software. And so we need to think about designing the identity as part of this exploration experience. How does that identity fit in the screen? It's not about business cards. It's not about letterheads. It's not about websites even. It's deeper than that. It's about those connections with people. And given that language of behavior is critically important now, it's about also exploring the behavioral language. And we think about signature interactions that can differentiate and add delight to the experience. CoverFlow is a great example of that. It's the Apple method of being able to look through your music, but I would consider that a signature interaction that other companies have tried to adopt. But quite frankly, it's owned by Apple. People perceive that as an Apple invention. And so anyone trying to use that kind of doesn't get perceived with that inventive quality. Now, why signature interactions? Well, people remember the amazingly good experiences they have and the amazingly bad experiences they have. And we're trying to get people to those amazingly good experiences. And when you consider that if you create a ton of great, amazingly good experiences, you create that loyalty, you create that love of your brand, people are much more willing to forgive you when you make mistakes or when things go wrong. I also think the patterns aren't that memorable because they sit in the middle. This is the stuff that's critically important to design, but it's not what helps your product stand out. So think about continuing to push into new ways of creating interactions and creating designs. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's certainly a conflict here between what's unique and what's usable. I'm not saying go and create a bunch of crazy stuff. But here's a good example where about a year ago, my friend had just bought the Mini. And inside, she had these disco lights. And so it kind of had this mood lighting. And when she drove around, the colors inside the Mini would sort of change color. Super cool looking, but even she admitted that maybe it wasn't the safest thing to have happen while driving, right? So be mindful of the fact that there's challenges there. Now I'm going to show some signature interactions that you're probably familiar with, some of them you may not be, that I think kind of, you know, clearly represent what I see as new things. Clear is a perfect example because it just was released maybe a month ago and hit number one spot on the iTunes store very quickly. And when we think about creating these interactions, they're really about driving it around the core experience. What's the true value or the true essence of that product you're trying to create. It's not worthwhile spending interactions that are signature-like on your settings screen, right? Think about it in terms of the true meaning of what it is you're trying to create for your people. Street maps. Very easy, intuitive, but also so different than anything else that existed before. Path got a lot of attention because of some of the uniqueness in those navigation elements and the timeline and the cover. This is the little web book, which is just purely content-based desktop. No interface whatsoever. No desktop with files and folders and structures and things like that. And the easel kind of guides how the interface happens. And then the TaskRabbit mobile app, which has the task wheel at the front that tells you how what kind of tasks you can do. And the list goes on. I mean, some of those are obviously very familiar because they're well-known products, but I think this is a great way for us to stand out. But remember, you can't reach the top of that pyramid without a solid foundation. So it doesn't matter about creating something, you know, idiosyncratic or fun if nothing else works, right? So caution. And it's, you know, as Jonathan Ive once said, it's really easy to be different, but it's very difficult to be better. Next, I want to talk about connecting with customers. And I really think that there's a deep understanding that we need to have of customers to build passion and build brand loyalty. And, you know, I'm sort of talking about this from the context of this idea of ecosystems and permaculture, which is something that I'm not intimately familiar with. And if you ask me if I was a gardener, I would say no. In fact, I pretty much have a dead orchid in my kitchen, and that's about it. So I'm not a specialist at this, but I do believe that there's something really interesting happening in the design of permaculture, or the principles around permaculture that we can take into our work. And permaculture helps designers model a final design that's based on the observation of how ecosystems interact. Modern permanent culture, as it's also known, is a system design tool, which I think is phenomenal. And it's also a way of looking at the whole system in terms of finding opportunities of places that are broken and then trying to fix them. So this is really what we do as user experience designers. But I think what's even more important is 12 principles that were created for permaculture in the 70s by a guy called Holmgren, one of which resonates with me and the way that I observe marketing teams and product teams interacting today. Use edges and value the marginal. The interface between things is where the most interesting events are taking place. These are often the most valuable, diverse, and productive elements in the system. This is really speaking to a lot of things that I observe as I interact with those different clients on projects. So as a visual designer, I felt like the easy way for me to tell this story or talk about it in greater depth is really to look at it in visual form. So let's look at an organization. And the brand, like I said earlier on, is that sits at that middle. And many of us are also stuck in the middle of that organization. Alan Cooper wrote about this many years ago in the Inmates book. And it was true of engineers then that being in this chasm or in this middle area where they don't have visibility into how users work and how what they need means that they were sort of blind to what's happening. And I think that happens for designers too. I think it happens for marketers and brand owners too. And we need to move out of that. And all the action, you know, as we saw earlier, is really happening at the edges of the organization. I think there's effective product teams that operate closer to the edge and have a much better sense of what's needed. But all those touch points are happening at the edges or outside the edges at least. But people in the middle, the center, marketing and brand folks and designers and product creators, they're blind to those edges if they're not careful. And I think it's even worth noting for some of those effective product teams and marketers, there's, you know, sort of tension that happens because product teams feel like they understand their users very deeply and really know what they need. And marketers have this great sort of global view of the organization but don't have the insight and the depth of knowledge that those product teams have. And so there's kind of a lot of disconnects, right? Product teams think that they know better. They should be guiding a different interface or a different design. It doesn't need to follow the brand guidelines. The brand folks feel like they need to push these guidelines or these standards on them and create, you know, this sense of structure that's needed because programmers and developers don't really know what that means. So these are big challenges. These are big problems that are happening in organizations that aren't delivering great products. And brand guidelines, I think, are likewise centrally focused, centrally created, not really thinking about the context of the user and their needs. Also, surveys, I think, while valuable, they can help us understand a lot about our customers. They're somewhat narrowly focused, right? They don't necessarily give us the sense of how or the motivations for what our users need. I just got a TiVo survey like 2 days ago, and quite frankly, the only reason I answer it is because it's offering me a new iPad potentially, but I haven't won it yet, so I kind of gave up on it. But the questions that it asks me are really rudimentary, and they don't really change that much. So they're not getting all that much information from me that's helping them deliver greater, better experiences. I also think marketing segmentation or marketing efforts are somewhat focused on the first parts of those of the customer life cycles, which is truly valid, very helpful, and very informative. But when you consider so many of those other touch points are happening at different points in the cycle, there's not enough information that's collected. And then usability testing. It happens inside a lot of fabricated environments. And while useful, it really only helps us validate whether we're right or wrong. It doesn't really help us innovate and push further into greater, more memorable experiences. And focus groups, you know, they're just kind of one big party in the middle, right? One loud voice, lots of people talking, lots of opinions being pushed. But how do you translate that? Really challenging stuff to do. Obviously, social media has really helped and put more connections in place between the center and the outside, but still very, you know, 140 character conversations that are happening, maybe not that meaningful. And so I think really, truly understanding the edges means that we need to break out of this center, go outside, visit often, meet people often, and really make the edges of our organization much more visible and connected to the outside world. A couple years ago, I was doing a user research project for a telehealth product. And this is a product that a really sick patient would have at home so they can manage their care and sort of stay connected to a health provider. And a lot of the people that use them are usually quite old or have been through some major surgery. And you go into somebody's home and you see them in this state, and it's a pretty humbling experience. There's medication everywhere. There's tons of rules and guidelines about what pills to take. And quite frankly, it's overwhelming for a lot of people. And these people, given that they're so sick, they can't leave. They can't leave their houses. They are not connected to the outside world. And this is a huge emotional experience that you can't gather from surveys or, you know, other types of, you know, research. We need to go out and visit them and experience that and bring that insight back. Seeing really is believing. And sharing the insight from the edges is, I think, a truly powerful method to provide focus for the organization. If everybody could go out to the world, I think that would be awesome. But even just bringing more of that insight back can help everybody understand truly what the needs are of those customers. And if you truly understand the user's needs, you can transform an industry, you can transform your products, you can transform everything around you. And if you value the margins and you help your teams have the freedom to innovate, your organization will move and it will innovate itself. So next I'm going to talk about creating a culture of user experience. And while obviously I'm very passionate about design, I think the bigger challenge for us is really through leadership and through pushing design further up the organizations that we work in. I think it takes a lot of hard work. It's not an easy thing. It takes leadership, process, so many things. And I'm only going to talk about a few of them, but I think leadership is a key to creating better brands in the interface. Change is really damn hard, don't get me wrong. I mean, Microsoft, I admire for really pushing to create something dramatically different and really changing their overall experience. But it's still taken them 6 years to do it, and they're not even finished yet. They're not even close. And that's a massive amount of effort by a massive organization. And it just talks about or reflects on the fact that this is really hard stuff. And I see executives now seeing the value of user experience. This is Mark Templeton. He's the Citrix CEO. And he believes strongly in design at Citrix and is pushing that organization further. So for a CEO to be meeting and talking about this, I think is a drastic change in how companies are starting to operate. And about 4 years ago, he asked Catherine Courage, who became the VP of User Experience, to join the company. And Catherine, I think, is a great example of somebody that's leading user experience to transform company. The design is considered a lot more strategic there, and she's doing a lot of things to evolve the way they work. One of the things I'm probably the most proud of in the last couple of years is these design principles that we created with her. And the principles themselves are basically five sort of very sort of emblematic ways philosophically to drive better user experiences in the company. And so we created them to drive products, create better product design at Citrix. I think we had pretty high hopes for them, and we certainly held a lot of workshops. We had a lot of conversations and did a lot of research across Citrix worldwide. And we really didn't expect to get the kind of impact that we had. I'm going to show you a video right now of the principles themselves.
Other Citrix. Here are five guiding principles to help you get started.
I think their sixth principle is probably something like design for Chewbacca in there. So I think one great thing about the principles is that they sort of expanded and they grew much bigger than we ever anticipated. And some of the evidence of that is that they're pretty much used everywhere across the organization. Citrix is a pretty big company, thousands and thousands of people. And obviously the principles drive design. They help inspire developers to create better crafted experiences. They're actually used to help new employees onboard and use the principles in the way they work. And what's interesting about that is it's not just about design anymore. It's about how people are even just using it in legal groups to guide better language creation or create better guides for HR to really change the organization. Even the security ID badges have the principles on them. And it's like nothing I've seen before where they're really kind of consuming these principles of user experience to create better services for their customers. And they hold design summits all the time. Their executive team visits places like the D School at Stanford, reads a lot of the leadership design books. And Mark has listed design as one of the three most important things for the last 3 years on his agenda. I think that really says a lot about how companies can transform in this age. And the results are starting to show, too. The design team has grown from about 12 people to 80 in 3 years. And the Citrix software is starting to win a lot of awards, too. They just got Best Enterprise App at the Mobile Web Conference last week. I also think UI guidelines are a great way to inspire product teams to adopt a new system. And alongside the principles, we created those UI guidelines for Citrix to help create a better foundation for design. But I really think that we're not doing enough in this area. I think we need to create better tools for people to be able to implement our designs. Otherwise, we're just not hitting that level of detail and quality that we need to. And so we need to push that a lot further from where we have been. And I love standards, and I think they help greatly improve the baseline expectations and the design rationale so that people can understand that better. But I also think that they're actually one of the biggest obstacles to innovation that we have today. Here's a perfect example. In the last year, we've been working with a client whose sort of essence is about passion and being a passionate brand, and yet they stick true and dearly to Arial being their branded typeface, right? And I don't think I consider myself much of a type snob, but I think that they can do better with more freedom and pushing design throughout the organization in their software and other experiences. Next, I'm going to shift over to a slightly different company, Practice Fusion, and their product I showed a little bit earlier. They're a web-based EMR, and they're a company that I think is really innovating at the edges. And when we met them, we met their chief marketing officer, Paul. He's on the left-hand side here sitting with Big Al. And our first meeting with him, he came in and said, we have a web-based EMR system for general practitioners or doctors, and we really want you to create an iPad app, but it needs to be disruptive, truly disruptive, so that it changes the way we create all of our other software. And my first response was, that's awesome. And my second response was, holy shit, how are we going to do that? But it's up to us, right? We need to step up and do that. And I feel like having that opportunity was possible because of the kind of culture that Practice Fusion has to innovate. And it also comes down from the CEO, Ryan Howard, who collaborated with us early and often on the design. And so driving us to a better experience, driving us to create a better iPad product. And the marketing team was also heavily integrated and heavily involved with the work we were doing. And through those workshops, through the design, through the prototyping and the evaluation work that we did, it really became a much more effective team working on the edges. And the process, I think, too, really helps drive us to that success, right? Going outside, visiting understanding what those needs are is truly important. And you can't do that without a good process. And, you know, obviously Cooper's known for a good process, and I don't mean to be a slave to it, but I think it really helps us philosophically think about these problems the right way. I'll show you a video now, kind of how the Practice Fusion process looked. I think what was cool about this presentation, this was a presentation that Stefan gave. He's one of the principal designers at Cooper. And he presented this to 1,200 doctors. And partway through his presentation, he said, he sort of interrupted himself and he said, "You notice that I've not even invoked the keyboard yet." And for physicians, this was a pretty powerful moment where they realized the ease and simplicity that could be brought to them through the interface. So in closing, a few things to remember and hopefully be inspired by. Value the margins of your organization. Visit the edges to understand user needs. Stop championing your brand and start championing your user. And drive your brand through user experience. So obviously I'm happy to take questions at this point. If anybody wants to step up to the mic, I'll start a conversation.
So I work for an advertising agency, and my responsibility is in experience planning. And one problem I think we get all the time is sort of, I don't know how to describe this better, but the kind of philosophical differences between what I'd call the big idea philosophy and, I guess, the best way to summarize this is as a village philosophy. So I think that a lot of times I kind of run into the friction that runs around kind of traditional creative design that's centered around the big idea. And like, oh, we're going to have this big idea, and then we'll kind of just create creative out of that, and I think that the creative can meet a lot of the design ideas that you listed. And this sort of contra idea of what we really need to do is actually sort of stop the big idea and actually kind of come together in a multidiscipline kind of way to produce experiences that really hit all the points, both aesthetically and then through user demands. Right. And I guess I'm any kind of feedback on, is that something that I'm the only person who sees that happening, that kind of challenge, and then kind of working through that?
Yeah, I don't think you're the only person that sees that challenge. I mean, the big idea is something that I think is pushed a lot in advertising. And to be honest, like, I've never really worked in advertising. So I obviously hear a lot about it, and I see a lot of it more and more. But I think, to me, the big idea only really means anything if it's substantial, right? And if it really resonates with people and kind of what's at the heart of what they're looking for. Otherwise, it's just that top of that pyramid, right? It's no different than us creating bad experiences with just bells and whistles. And if it doesn't really meet people's needs, it's not that useful. I don't, you know, I think that there's times when a big idea is useful, and I think it's times when it's multiple things, but it's very specific, I think, to people and their needs and the context that they're in. Other questions?
Hi. I was just wondering, from a workshop perspective, I noticed there was a very visual approach, a lot of stuff on the walls.
Yep.
I'm just wondering if you could kind of explain what you were doing there.
Yeah, so the sense of that what happens is we put a lot of imagery up, and the imagery that exists is interface screens, it's domain-specific imagery. You know, so if it's healthcare, we put a lot of healthcare-related stuff up there. Brands, car brands, personalities if needed. It's just a lot of imagery to inspire people, right? And we ask people to take stickers, green and reds or whatever, you know, it's kind of, you know, touchy-feely. And we ask them to say, well, you know, I like this and I don't like this. And it could be based on their visual preference. It could be based on the kind of emotional gut reaction. It could be based on just the, you know, their experience that they may have had with it. Those are all totally fine. It's about the sort of initial five-second reaction. And so everybody votes. And what we do is we pull the imagery that has a lot of the stickers, right? So that's where the conversation happens. We pull, you know, we might pull an image from a Microsoft design that has just all green stickers, and we talk about why that's interesting. We might have one that's all red stickers, and we talk about why that's interesting. But I think that where the really interesting conversations happen, where we see reds and greens, because there's a lot of, you know, disconnects or discussion about differences of opinion, right? And that's where we can help everybody understand collectively, well, why are those differences that people have, and what does that mean for us as a company that's driving towards this new product idea? And so we end up then putting this, you know, the images on one side, they're all green, and the images on the other side, they're all red, and then the stuff that's kind of, you know, chaotic in the middle. But we, you know, as the discussion also happens, we kind of shift that further one way or the other. We end up with this kind of continuum map, right? And the continuum map is like all these words that really are kind of sort of core to what we want that experience to be on one side, kind of the complete opposite of what we want it to be on the other. Yeah.
Sorry, far from the mic, but were you saying that the green and red represent favor or disfavor?
Yeah, so green is kind of the ideal experience, and red is kind of the not ideal experience. We can use other colors too. I don't suggest you should use one or the other.
So yeah. It's images that people have actually interacted with, not just visual impression?
No, it's both. I mean, I think it's good to have, I mean, we use physical packaging products, things like that too. It's useful to have stuff that people are familiar with,
Yeah. But
it's really good to have stuff that's completely abstract too, because just that really evokes first-time impression. No, it's our clients that we're working with, right? So it's people from marketing, people from sales, people that are in the development team, people that are product managers, people that are designers. I mean, Cooper's obviously there too, because we're kind of facilitating that conversation. We're kind of adding to that conversation. But it's really about bringing people in. And I think, you know, the people that get the most out of it, like I was sort of suggesting earlier, or the people outside of those product teams that haven't had that same kind of collective understanding. All this conversation happens, and those are the people that come up to me afterwards and say, wow, I just learned so much about that. And it's, you know, it's really awesome to feel like we're helping people learn about what makes a great experience too.
Part of a very small development team. I'm the designer, and there's a developer. And he's very much focused on the minimum viable product philosophy, develop rapidly. I'm very much focused on making sure the interface is great and the user experience is wonderful. They seem to be a bit at odds because everything we've seen here is a lot of planning, a lot of, you know, dreaming and building a brand before you implement it. So how, I guess, do you take this type of philosophy and apply it to a rapid development, minimum viable product?
That's a great question. The process works really well for both fast and long projects. We've done this process for projects where we designed something in 2 weeks. Practice Fusion project was about 3.5 months, but the TaskRabbit work that we did was under 2 weeks of visual design and about 4 weeks of interaction design. So
you can really extend this to be something smaller.
And were you reiterating as you went along the design process?
Yeah, I mean,
process?
It gets you to the minimum viable, right? But we're trying to always get to minimum valuable product, I think, which is slightly different. It's not worth pushing something else just shitty because nobody's going to like it. But
that's a debate that rages on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, I know.
I think to me, like, you still, even if you're creating a minimal viable product, you still need a vision for where it's going to go, right? So we try to design for the future and then scale it back to something really fast.
All right. Second thing was, will those slides become available at some point as well?
I'll put them online later.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Any other questions? Yeah. We follow kind of an ethnographic approach, right? So I think there's multiple types of real user research, whether it's participatory design, whether it's ethnographic interviews and observations. I mean, I think kind of what's core to us is the observations, because people generally aren't good at communicating about what they need, and observations kind of the best way to see and notice where people are frustrated or having challenges, or, you know, where they're working around systems that exist. I mean, that's kind of generally the philosophy we try to take. We do guerrilla style. Sometimes we ideally kind of do it at a much deeper level. I think especially as a lot of the products we look at are pretty complex, we kind of need it to get a lot of domain expertise at the same time too. Any other questions? Yeah. Right. I don't pretend to know exactly how Apple does it, but I think there's a couple things that I do know. One is they hire really good designers. I know that some former Cooperistas have gone there, and they hire a lot of designers too. A lot of people work on their product teams. I think they have a better ratio of design to development, and I think that's a big part of their success that's probably not given enough credit. And obviously they get a ton of great user research from one man, or, you know, used to, that helps drive them as well. But Apple's also in a very kind of focused, targeted area that is a little bit easier to design for, perhaps, than some of the more complex systems that exist out there too. Not to discredit anything they're doing. I mean, I love Apple as much as you probably do, but to me, I think culturally is the big difference for them. They have a great sense of design and responsibility. I know that, you know, there's plans to create learning around design at Apple so that people are engaged, but I really think that a lot of the credit is due to just the large design community they have there and the great talent of designers they do too. Any other questions? Drinks at the bar? All right. Hope you had fun.